Welcome to King's Health Partners Haematology GP podcast series. I'm Dipti Ride, I'm a consultant haematologist at GSTT, and today's podcast will be focusing on anemia, the common queries GPs have around this topic, and I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Winnie Kwan, who's a GP in Bexley and South East London Cancer Alliance GP lead. So thank you for joining me today, and Winnie, and I will hand you over with our first question.
Thank you, Dipti. So, when the blood count result shows an abnormally low HB, how do the other indices in the full blood count help us to determine what the next step for investigations are, please?
So I think looking at the hemoglobin, the most important next indice to look at would be the MCV, telling you the size of the cells, because whether the cells are big, macrocytic, or small, microcytic, or normocytic. And that's the first thing to look at, because there are different causes for all. So microcytic anemia usually reflects iron deficiency or hemoglobinopathies. Macrocytic anemias can reflect either medication, increased reticulocytes, liver dysfunction, thyroid dysfunction, hypothyroidism. So looking at the MCV is really important. You can get a normal chromic anemia in patients who have renal failure. So looking at those is really important. The MCH is important because that tells the mean corpuscular hemoglobin. So if you have a low MCV and a low MCH, less than 27 in terms of MCH, then and the hemoglobin is low and the background of the patient's right, you might go down the hemoglobinopathy pathway. So I think looking at the MCV is really important to start with, and then looking at the MCH and the MCHC does help. Very rarely I get asked about the red cell distribution width, and that just tells us about the size of the cells. So if you've got a wide red cell distribution width, it tells us there's some small cells and some large cells. And occasionally a dimorphic form is when you've got some large cells and small cells, and that just tells us that you've got probably dual deficiency of iron and B12 and folate. So I think those are what I normally mention.
Thank you, Dipti. That's really helpful. So when checking the hematinics, is it better to do serum iron rather than ferritin because the latter is raised in inflammatory conditions?
So if you want to, a serum iron is labile. You're absolutely right. A ferritin, if you use a ferritin on the background of inflammatory conditions, if it's low and there's inflammation, then you know the iron is definitely low. If it's borderline or high, you may not be able to tell. Again, the MCV, as we discussed earlier, may help. So I think looking at the iron indices, the iron studies, is usually helpful. And this is made up of the serum iron, the TIBC, and the transferrin saturations.
Thank you, Dipti. So should iron deficiency be treated in the absence of anemia?
Okay, that's a good one. Usually, this is usually in young women, isn't it, of menopausal age. And that's a physiological iron deficiency without anemia due to menstruation. It doesn't necessarily need to be treated. I think we try and correct everything. If it's very low, then the patient is symptomatic, then they will be anemic. So I think it's looking for the cause of the iron deficiency and then seeing physiologically if it's having an impact.
Great, thank you. So, you know, fatigue is a really common presentation in primary care. And some of our elderly patients, not uncommonly, have lowish B12 at the lower limit of normal range. Should they be treated for B12 deficiency with or without iron or folate deficiencies?
So again, really challenging because as folks get older, their gastric parietal antibodies decrease as well. And so there's a bit of gastric atrophy and the absorption of B12 is low, the diet changes. And I think first of all, is just checking for multiple hemolytic deficiencies. So if they've got iron or folate deficiencies, yes, definitely need to be treated. If it's at the low end of the B12, what we have is a test called a methylmalonic assay, an MMA test that we do, and that reflects tissue deficiency more accurately. And if that's raised, then you definitely need to treat. Taking a pragmatic approach, if it's very low and there's a dietary deficiency, I think it does no harm to treat with B12. We know that low B12 can cause neurological problems, especially in the elderly. So, you know, you may take the pragmatic approach that you want to treat with B12, and that could be intramuscularly, or it could be high dose oral B12.
Thank you, Dipti. Should hematinics be requested at the same time as the FBC when a patient appears pale or complain of fatigue?
I think that's a clinical judgment, isn't it? But if you're thinking the patient is going to be anemic, again, you've got those full blood count indices, it does make sense because for hematinics, if that's a common cause, to check them at the same time, otherwise you're bringing the patient back. There's other causes of pallor and fatigue, as you know. And I think if you've just got fatigue, you also need to think of things like hypothyroidism, and other causes of fatigue per se, and that will depend on the clinical history you take with that patient.
Yeah, thank you. So say in the absence of overt or occult blood loss and a negative celiac screen, should persistent iron deficiency anemia patients be referred to the hematologist for further investigations?
So again, that's a really important question because persistent iron deficiency needs to be investigated and it doesn't necessarily come to hematologists. You know, if you've got GI symptoms, then they need to go to gastroenterologist. If you've got a patient who's got persistent iron deficiency anemia and you've got occult blood loss and they are elderly, the commonest cause for this is a GI tumour. So I think you need to refer to the where the symptoms are. If you've got urology issues and blood in the urine, then they may need to have their renal tract investigated. So I think it doesn't always be to hematology. It may be look for underlying GI occult causes and they may need endoscopies or yeah. They may need renal investigations. And then if there's no particular cause, then it's a discussion with the hematologist. And you know, we always do advice and guidance and I'm happy to have a conversation.
That's really helpful. Can you advise what can be done to help to improve anemia associated with chronic non-renal conditions?
What sort of conditions are we talking about here?
You know, with the elderly, they've got multi-morbidities. You know, they have arthritis and they've got, slightly impaired renal function or, you know, they've got chronic disease, you know, and they have a lowish HB. In the absence of renal problems, we can't refer them for injections, you know, further investigations in that respect. So what should we do? What can be done?
So I think, first of all, I think it's looking at, like, is that physiologically okay for that patient with their medical conditions? You know, like I said earlier on, you can have a menstruating lady in her childbearing years who's iron deficient but not anemic. That's physiologically appropriate for that. You may get an elderly patient who has got multiple comorbidities and they've got a hemoglobin of 100 and they're managing fine. They don't necessarily need it corrected.
You know? Right. Yeah.
If it's lower than that and it's they're compromised and they have iron deficiency, we know with the inflammation, intravenous iron can overcome the inflammation and can sometimes be beneficial. But again, using the iron studies to make that judgment call and discussion. I think when it comes back to that, we want to optimize someone's hemoglobin. We may not need to normalize it. And it does depend on how that patient is clinically and whether it's physiologically okay for them to be at that level.
Great. That's very helpful. Thank you, Diti.
So I think this is our first podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Winnie, for joining us today. We hope you learned something along the way with us. Please spread the word to your colleagues and share the link and let us know if there are any topics you'd like us to focus on for future episodes. Or if you'd like to be involved, we're very much looking forward to developing this Haematology GP podcast series with your input and hope you can join the next one.